Let me turn on another light because I can't see that well here. Oh, and I'll turn the fan off. Yeah, let's just make it hotter in here.
Sacrifices you don't make for all listeners. Sitting there in the heat. You're going to be like the abominable snowman. Boy, it's hot. Eventually, he's just a puddle.
Are you hot? Gosh, it's hot.
Avengers Spotlight!
So, Avengers number 44, baby. We've got a new artist.
Yeah.
We're back to the main storyline. I think we got stuff to talk about.
Will it be good?
I don't know.
Let
us see.
Are we in the real show?
Well, we're going to go in right now. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins presents Avengers Spotlight. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am here with my Avengers Spotlight buddy, Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hello.
Hello. How are you, Doc?
I'm holding back a belch because I just drank all the rest of that can of soda. Oh, my.
Mm. And you do us proud every time. With your lack of
soda?
Belch. With your lack of belching.
My lack of belching?
You have such belch control.
That's about all I got. You know what I got? I got rhythm. I don't have it. No. So I'm the oldest guy at my shop. We now have four people in our shop at work. And so at 55, I'm clocking in at the oldest. And the youngest is 40. So one of the guys recently was diagnosed with high blood pressure. So he's got he's got the portable, he's got the cuff with a little machine.
Right.
So I'm like, let me check my blood pressure. Oh, 125 over 81. And there's like,
not bad.
No. Well, I mean, it better be good for the three medications I take for it. That's what the hell I'm paying for.
Okay.
So
I don't know if it's three medications, not bad, but it's not bad otherwise.
Well, I take like a water pill during the day and then I take two of the pills at night. So, but anyway,
I take one. I took it this morning and I'm high as a kite right now. I don't know if you know it. It's called placebo.
Placebo. Very funny. But
back to our regularly scheduled talk.
I'm concerned about these guys because they're like, then another guy from outside our shop comes in, and he's like smaller guy. He's older than me. He's appears to be healthy, low weight. He had like 159 over 100.
That's not good.
But all the guys in the shop, like the next guy that came closest to me was like 135 over like 98, and the rest of them were in like the 140s and like the low 150s, and I'm like, man, you guys
makes you feel better about your conditioning, doesn't it?
I'm like, better health through pharmaceuticals right here, guys. You should go see your doctor. Start taking some blood pressure meds. I mean, I paid $3 for like a 90-day supply. I'm fine paying that. So, all right, enough about my health woes.
Whoa.
I guess, shall I read the synopsis?
Sure.
Oh, wait. So I've been picking up some new Avengers. I got Avengers versus Aliens. I haven't read that yet. I got Avengers team up with Ultraman. I don't know how familiar you are with Ultraman, Paul.
Only peripherally.
I know Luke Giaconetti is knows who Ultraman is. It's a very interesting story. Of course it is.
Tell me more.
Well, maybe we'll save it and we'll do a spotlight on it. Or maybe we'll invite Luke on.
We'll that do a crossover. That sounds like a good plan to me.
So I don't want to spoil too much on that. But yeah, I've been reading current Avengers. And like the actual Avengers book that came out this month, Hyperion is hurtling his way towards the Earth, and he's going to destroy it. Like a Hyperion from another, you know, parallel whatever, universe, multiverse. So, yep, that's what's going on in the Avengers. And, of course, they just relaunched another, they just started another series called Avengers Assemble. So, yeah, there's like three or four current Avengers books out right now. So, anywho, back to this book. So, we are covering Avengers number 44, which is, old numbering would be 459. And this came out in, is that the release date? Or was it the, I think that's the cover date. The release, I think, was in July from what I looked on another site. So September 2001 is the cover. So we may see something change in the books in a few issues, perhaps. But so our credits, Kurt Busiek is doing the writing duties. Manuel Garcia is the pencils. Bob Layton is the inks. Tom Smith is the colors. Richard Starkings and Comicraft's Albert DeShinsey is the letter. Andy Kubert is the cover artist. Mark Sumerak is the assistant editor. And Tom Brevoort is the editor. And our book is entitled, or our story is, Down Among the Dead Men. Stingray blows up Atuma's undersea processing plant, cutting off
his Atuma.
Atuma. Cutting off his army supply lines, then joins Hercules, Jack of Hearts, and Scarlet Witch at Rollo Bay, driving Atuma's army into the ocean. In China, deviants surround Warbird's Avenger squad when Warbird challenges Dulpus to single combat for his army's leadership. Accepting, Dulpus picks massive shapeshifter Glom as his proxy, but Warbird defeats Glom, but takes control of Dulpus' army and disarms the deviants. In Siberia, Firebird and Thor battle the present's growing army of radioactive zombie slaves, including Transferred Avengers, Captain America, Black Knight, and Quicksilver. Outraged by Cap's seeming demise, in particular, a furious Thor rips the little elves' lungs out. No, wait. The furious Thor nearly kills the presence until Starlight begs for mercy, offering to restore all the presence's zombies to normal if Thor spares the presence, since he is the radioactive Starlight's only companion. Thor agrees, the zombies are cured, and Starlight accompanies presence into custody. Monitoring events, Kang meets soldiers hoping to join his army, but when Whirlwind... I know Scott Gardner will get that reference. Anybody? Paul?
No.
Ah, that was the Avengers video game. And when Whirlwind would come out, he would go, ha, 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 ha. Anyway.
Okay, that explains why I don't know it.
Well, Scott used to own that game, too, so the actual arcade game. But when Whirlwind assumes his power will make him at least a general, Kang is unimpressed by this attitude and teleports Whirlwind back to Earth. Meanwhile, Dwayne Freeman calls the Avengers to Washington to confer with the Joint Chiefs regarding Kang and privately worries about the government's backup plan, a Sentinel Army. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, that's it. We're out.
All right. So let's, before we start doing a page by page, what did you think of the artwork in this?
I thought it invoked another artist. I thought it felt more like Jim Starlin.
Oh, that's an interesting comparison. Yeah, I can see that thought.
Especially with Thor going berserkowitz. But then I could see the Bob Layton in here.
That's more what I was thinking. I think this is heavily Bob Layton'd, and I do not mean that as an insult. I mean it as a compliment. Now, most of the time, with 9 out of 10 inkers, I prefer that they let the artist style take over. There's a select few that I'm kind of okay with them letting their inking style provide the stylistic elements. And I think that's kind of what we're getting here. I think Bob Layton is kind of taking it over a little bit, cleaning it up a little bit more than Manuel Garcia probably would want.
Yeah,
but I think, in all but I think honesty, it's to my tastes.
I can't. Outside of what we're reading right now, I can't remember, and I apologize if someone's a big Manuel Garcia fan. I can't think of what he's done.
I looked him up briefly, and I saw some titles that I recognized. I didn't pull them to compare the artwork, but I think his style is a little looser than what Bob Layton did with it. And I'm not necessarily saying that's bad. It's just that this is more to my liking. And I do think I'm crediting Layton with making it more along the lines of what I would want. But it's pretty solid overall. I think the, you know, to give Garcia credit, I think the layouts are pretty good. The pacing is a little inconsistent. There's parts where it seems like it stays longer, and parts where it seems like it rushed through a little bit. Now, that could be the writing, that could be the storytelling by the artist. I'm not sure which.
Well, I found myself... I guess I... Prior to this, were we getting such... Like, this reminded me of older books, but at the same time... Okay, so like take the Celestial Madonna saga, right? At some points we had different teams in different locations in the same book, right? So you cut between a lot. But I don't remember having this kind of reminded me like take the end of it, like as George Lucas was doing like at Return of the Jedi, you had multiple storylines going on. At the end of like the last Revenge of the Sith, you had so many multiple storylines going on, it's almost ridiculous to how many you're like, okay, we jump to this, we jump to this, we jump to this, we jump to this, we jump to this. I kind of felt that in this book, that I was like, all right, couldn't we have just maybe covered two of them in a book and expanded upon it? But then I'm going against things I've said in the past, like, oh, I like when it's dense storytelling and it takes a while to read it. So I'm like, so what? What are you looking for, Bill? Shut up.
I've mentioned that in the past as well, though, that where we are generally against the expanded or the decompressed storytelling, that doesn't mean that it's always bad. I think it should be a little bit more of a pick and choose type thing. I think, you know, in modern day, they've gotten to the decompressed storytelling like in all stories, and I don't know that that's really the best way to go, but there are certain stories that I would like to see them, you know, stretch it out a little bit, give us a little bit more. I think in this instance, now I may regret saying this because I know this particular storyline goes on and on for a while, but I thought we could, you know, that we basically have three different battle fronts going on, plus a fourth contingent.
Well, three battles. We got Kang, which is a fourth. And then technically, if you count the Wasp somewhere else, that's like five.
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded seeing each of the main battles kind of having an issue unto itself, with each of the three Avengers split groups. But again, with as long as this saga is going to go on, I don't know that I wouldn't regret that by the time it's over.
Yeah, it could make it even longer.
Oh, and there's no question it would. But yeah. You know, would that be to the negative or not so much? Now, a lot of times when they've dragged these things out, like when they, you know, did the clone saga, or I'm trying to think of other instances where they just like really just brought it so far along that, you know, some of those, you know, I felt like, you know, what do they do on the talk show where they kind of roll their fingers to like move it along?
That's
kind of what I was thinking. Whereas this one, I'm doing the two fingers stretching apart. Like, hey, give me a little more of this.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, there may be parts in this storyline where I feel like, okay, it justified getting through this as quickly as it did. Or there may be parts where I say you could have, you know, you could have cut this out and lengthened this part. So I don't know. When we're done, I guess I'll look at it a little bit more. But you know, that's my initial thoughts on it. Now, I guess we start with the cover.
So as we go through, not to belabor it. So as we go through, like certain pages where I feel it's more Layton, or if I feel it's more Starlin, I'll just
point it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the cover is Andy Kubert, and you know, Scott and I have debated Joe Kubert a lot because he's got kind of that scratchy style, and if you look at like the musculature on Thor's arms, he's got that, which I assume he learned from his dad. But I don't think it looks right here. I think it would have been better. It almost looks unfinished because of the scratchiness here.
Mm. Yeah, it's this is kind of like a scene we will probably see inside the book, though. That's nice for a cover.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it's not a bad cover. It just feels like it's incomplete to me. Like it could just use a little bit of, like, you know, on the hammer itself, the shadow on it. Again, the shadows on his arms from his muscles. I think they would benefit from being just solid black instead of
outlines with scratches in them. I got you. Yeah. I mean, I think I like it a little more than you, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Whereas, like, when Joe Kubert would do that with, you know, Hawkman or, you know, Sergeant Rock or something along those lines, I kind of dug it the way he did it. But, you know, so I guess I'm being a little hypocritical because I like it in some instances and I don't like it in others. And it's again, not to overstate, it's not that I hate it here. I just think it would have looked sharper if it didn't have it. I think it's a well-drawn cover. I just think it feels unfinished to me.
Mm.
You know what it feels like? Just thinking about it, it feels like they colored over the pencils and they never inked it.
Oh,
possibly. They did that. Yeah. I know they did that in an issue of Captain America drawn by John Byrne, where they did directly from the pencils with no inking.
Mm.
And I found that interesting, but that's what this feels like to me. So we open up with Stingray battling Atuma's hordes, and boy, is Stingray such a sharp-looking costume.
I was just going to say, this is probably one of the best representations, because I know earlier, years ago, was it in the Masters of Evil saga? Wasn't Stingray make a guest appearance in there? And his costume didn't look this good.
Yeah, this is really well-drawn.
And you know what's especially cool is that he doesn't have eye holes, but it works.
Yeah. But I think it looks especially sharp on the splash page and on page 3 at the bottom.
Oh, with the kawoomb?
Yeah, the white and red really pop. It's just such a... I don't know who designed the costume, and maybe I'll look that up when I have a moment, but I think it's just really cool looking. One of the cooler costumes.
He's using electricity on the Atlanteans. That's cheating.
So I've just looked up quickly Stingray from Wikipedia. First appearance was Submariner number 19. First appearance as Stingray, because he did appear in his civilian identity before that.
Oh, I forget his civilian identity's name.
Walter Newell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dr. Walter Newell.
Created by Roy Thomas and Bill Everett.
Hmm.
So Bill Everett is, you know, famous for creating the Submariner back in the Golden Age. So he also co-created Daredevil. So he's pretty good credentials. So Stingray kind of single-handedly takes out Atuma's guards.
Yeah.
And then you know, Hercules and Jack of Hearts and who else is in that group?
Hercules, Jack of Hearts, the Scarlet Witch, and who is that other person with them? I can't see.
The Vision.
Vision? No, the Vision's with Warbird.
Oh, yes, you're right. He is.
Hold on. And I could open the book back up. Let's see. Stretch. Wait.
Here we go. What's called Avengers Squad Beta, Scarlet Witch, acting leader.
No. Who is it?
Stingray, Jack of Hearts, Hercules. It doesn't say there's anybody else.
Well, there's a person on that page back there.
Yes, there is.
Looks like, yeah, there's some guy. Oh, that could just be random flunky with a gun.
I guess that's maybe an Atlantean?
No, that could just be like a UN soldier or somebody, or Canadian, because aren't they in Canada? So it's probably Canadian soldier. A. Yeah, I thought it looked like he was blasting something from his hands, but they could just
be. Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Because there's another guy behind him shooting, so.
Okay, so we'll assume he's nobody. So then we cut over to...
So, of course, we have Hercules there, and that is Bob Layton-ish right there.
Very Bob Layton-ish.
Yeah.
Stingray is also very Bob Layton-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut to... What squad is this? Temporary Squad Gamma, which is Vision, Silverclaw, Black Widow, and She-Hulk, along with Ms. Marvel. Or is she Warbird at this time, I think?
She's Warbird right now.
And she's showing off her butt cheeks whenever possible in this book.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which tells you the era it came from. But I thought, you know, it went back and forth on me, first of all, like that. It seems to be a common trope to, I'm going to challenge the leader, and then if I beat them, then I'm the leader. On the other hand, it was well done in this.
Mm-hmm.
I did find myself looking at her mask, and I put that in quotations, thinking, does that really do anything to hide your civilian identity?
Does she hide her identity?
Then why does she wear a mask at all?
I don't know. Well, at the after she challenges and... Oh, yeah, the guy Dupla says, yeah, or you shall become my body slave. And Vision is like, he's like whispering, is this wise, Warbird? I know what I'm doing, Vision. I merely ask.
But you know what? As soon as she made the challenge, as I'm reading through this, I started thinking, you know, and when he's kind of taunting her, and I was thinking, ooh, you know, considering she's got the whole thing with... You know, from when she felt like she was taken advantage of by Marcus and all of that, you know, is this a good thing? And then that's exactly what Vision asked her.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a good job by Busiak, because he probably knew we'd be thinking that and addressed it immediately.
Mm-hmm. And when we first see Gloom, that panel immediately below it, I get a Starlin vibe from that. Because Starlin a lot is that people looking up with like a longer face.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Is Gloom in any way, or Glom?
Glom. Gloom.
Is he related to Goom? Because he looks kind of like him.
Yeah, I was like, hey, wait a second.
I think the Thor sequences look more Starlin-like.
Yes, well, especially with Angry Thor. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little bit with that first shot, but and I know it's been a while since we to the listeners, this will probably come quicker, but I've been very tied up over the summer, and the last one we did was the annual, which really had nothing to do directly with the rest of the fighting and everything going on. It was like a side tale with figuring out what was wrong with Hank Pym. So I was like, I had to get my head back wrapped around about all the different teams. And I'm like, oh, that's right. They're all over the place. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I had the same dilemma that I had to kind of figure out because you know, what you said is true. It's been a little longer than we anticipated in between the recording sessions. Yes, as far as listening, you're probably getting them at a fairly even pace. But from the recording sessions, it's been a little while since we recorded the annual. And it may be a while before this one airs. I don't know. We will see. But anyway, it took me a little while to just kind of get my head around what was going on and just to remember how that ended on that that cliffhanger and how it felt at that point. Because now, you know, it's we had that slowdown issue, which we addressed actually when we recorded about it, that it just kind of like came to a halt, the pace. But, you know, that, once it picked up again, it was fine. And then they even addressed it a little bit because they, you know, you do have contact from the Wasp at some point where she addresses what went on. So to me, all is forgiven. So we cut to Thor amongst the radioactive people.
Wait. What are they again?
Radioactive.
There you go.
And you know, I didn't notice when I was first reading it, like they kind of show us right off the bat down below Thor in the picture. Well, first of all, there's Captain America, but he stands out because you could see his shield, which is not radioactive. But next, just above the shield on the drawing, I hadn't noticed that you see Quicksilver, you know, in that form, but still racing around. Yeah. And then he comes over and he gives Thor a crat in the face.
Well, so why? Okay, I guess we could say the adamantium vibranium is why it didn't go radioactive. Maybe because it absorbed the radioactivity. Which should have given us a hint to what may happen in this. Because their clothes turn radioactive or match their aura, but the shield doesn't change.
So the shield is more impervious, I guess.
Well, let's talk about how impervious that shield is. Do you notice in the page where, so Cap goes to swing his shield down, Thor catches it in his hand, then the next page, Cap is talking to him, and Thor is straining to hold the shield, and then the next panel over, Thor's hand is bleeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not notice the bleeding part, but yeah.
So that's, you know, he's holding, and then that leads to the next page to where Thor has had enough of your shit.
Yeah, he's Captain Kirk with Reverend Jim. He has had enough of you.
And
but you know, I and that's a very Starlin-esque face on him in that shot.
Oh, that's what first clicked in my head for me. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why this looks so. This is looks a lot like an homage to Jim Starlin.
And it's very cool because you know he thinks that they are dead and unrecoverable. So he's totally furious.
And Firebird, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
She is a little concerned. Very concerned.
Yeah, she says in very, very small print, Mary, Mother of God, when Thor is unleashing on them. But we cut from there to Kang. Now, when Kang started addressing the people there, I had thought that the dude in the front was somebody that we knew.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out who he was. I thought it might be like Eunice the Untouchable or somebody like that.
But then he says he's an Australian, you know, he had Australian army training. And I'm like, who is this guy? Who is he?
Yeah.
And I don't know, whirlwind, pow. And Kang's like,
army training, sir.
Kang's like, deep, you know, like Dr. Evil with, you know, throwing. Will Ferrell down into you.
I'm okay. Burned very badly.
Oh, look, they've come to help me. I've been shot.
Then we cut back to Warbird fighting Goom. And I will call Goom. I don't care if he's
glum. It's a gloomy day. Oh, yeah, and she blasts him, and it just goes right through him. And he's like, of course, I'm going to tell you my strength, which will be probably my only weakness. Ha, ha, ha. I don't have any organs. Ha, ha, except one. Can you find it? Dumbass.
Well, and then a nice effective shot or sequence of shots when he starts to absorb her into him, and then you see like the terror in her eye with the reflection of Glom in her eye.
Yeah. In your eye.
And we go back to Thor. Now, this was, I thought, a really effectively written sequence. The art kind of feels a little jumpy. I mean, the pictures are really well drawn, but just from a story point of view, it feels like it's a little bit more difficult to follow from the pictures as far as like where everybody is at each moment. I don't know if you had the same sensation about it, but it is very,
I think that helps it being more chaotic in the battlefield, perhaps.
Okay, that's fair. And the presence is, you know, supremely overconfident. And Thor just starts to absorb whatever he's throwing at him. Again, very effective, especially when you see him starting to wither.
Yeah.
And you know, he goes from overconfident to, like, basically ready to die.
Mm-hmm.
Until Starlight, you know, is in a panic. And then we cut away from them again, back to Glom.
Blah, 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 blah. And he's just wrapping her up. And then she sees something glowing in the Glomness.
Yeah, and it turns out it is both his brain and his heart. And she starts to squeeze it.
Maybe it's his nutsack. Wow!
She took a hold of his heart.
And his heart.
Glom is in love.
Ow.
And then he's done at that point. And Warbird just declares herself in charge. Or it would be a complete betrayal of what passes for their code of honor in front of their men. Mm-hmm. And you see the embarrassment on the deviant, who looks like he could be part Skrull.
Yeah. But the TV that's behind him is like, yeah, great idea, jerk. Way to go.
So then back to Thor with the presence, and Starlight is, you know, begging him to have mercy and let him live, and that she will absorb the radiation off of the innocents and restore them to normal.
Mm-hmm. And then did we see everybody, you know, we see Quicksilver, Cap, and is that Wonder Man over there? Yeah, they're all recovering. Now, wait a minute. Hold on a second. So Wonder Man got turned in? Wonder Man's being of ionic energy. I would think he would have been immune, too. I call bullshit on that.
Yeah, I think that's one that you definitely could debate. And they have a nice conversation with, you know, Thor and Firebird.
Wait a minute. No, wait. Hold on. No, he wasn't there. It says, that doesn't make sense. It says Captain America, Leader, Thor, Black Knight, Firebird, Quicksilver.
Okay, so there is no Wonder Man in this
particular But there is.
Group. Are you Look, sure?
Yes. Well, then who else has a big-ass W, unless that's... Is that the Black Knight? No, no, she's not here either.
I know she's not.
Look, it's
where?
Look on the page where they're putting presents into the little buggy. Starlight's putting them in there. And then there's Cap on a stretcher. Is that Quicksilver on a stretcher?
That would be my guess.
And then there's another person who looks like they have a W down there. That's not the Black Knight.
I don't see the W.
Let me zoom in on this. That is a W, dude.
Where is it?
Page of the art would be 16, maybe? No. Hold on.
Well, just you're talking about the picture where they're on the stretchers.
Yeah.
Where in that picture?
The first person is Captain America. Oh, the next person, I think, is...
I think the next person might be Black Knight.
Yes. But then I guess that could be Quicksilver, but that looks like a W.
I see what you're pointing to. I mean, that's very vague looking to me, though.
Yeah, all right. I'll let it go. All right. I'll stop being a nitpick.
So we kind of have a meaningful conversation between Thor and Firebird, where Firebird is, concerned.
The life after.
She thinks it's possible that she can't die. And if that's the case, he's telling her, you know, it's basically he's saying it's a blessing and a curse because you see the people you care about die. And that he advises her to be aloof and says that he thought himself to have been aloof, but now he sees that he is not. I guess because he got so upset over everything that went down.
Yeah. So, that's a nice insight we get. Because, you know, people often forget that Thor is supposed to be a god. So.
Next time they ask you if you're a god, you say yes.
Yes. And then we got Warbird sitting on her throne. Getting everybody to give up the weapons and go home.
And then she makes contact with the Wasp, Triathlon, Hank. And, this is where they connect it to what went on in that annual. And I think that's kind of good that they did that. It makes me forgive it a little bit more. Excuse me. Then they get reached out to by Dwayne, who in the first
Dwayne Dibley.
I thought he was Professor Xavier the first shot.
Yeah, that does look a little, to me, my X-Men.
And that's, and then there's the connection, because that's when we get the image of the backup plan by the government being the Sentinels.
Yeah. I'm sure that would backfire.
And that is definitely a cool shot. And I'm wondering if this, I'm assuming that this isn't just a false image. I'm assuming that at some point this will come into play.
Now, hold on, let me go back here. I'm trying to remember, and it's convoluted, and I don't. So the person with Dwayne, when I read the book, did it say it was Valerie Cooper? Hold on, let me go back and look. Meanwhile, it doesn't. Hold on, let me look under supporting cast. Hi, Alvin.
He does call her Val.
Oh, okay. So that would be Valerie Cooper. Now, do you remember what's up with Valerie Cooper at certain points in the Marvel Universe history?
No, I don't.
It's actually Rachel Darkholm, Mystique.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, because what was it? Back close to, would have been the decade or so before this, I think. At one point, I have to look it up, because at one point, I think Valerie Cooper was taken over by the Dire Wraiths.
This is all lost on me. I don't remember any of this.
But then later she was actually Mystique, and I get confused because sometimes I read comics out of order. So, you know, you're out of order. That's out of order. So I don't know if this is Valerie Cooper for real or Mystique.
When I was a kid, I liked Barbara Cooper. Do you get that connection?
Give me another hint.
It would be on a 1970s TV show.
Oof. I need more than that.
It was a sitcom.
Nope. It's not ringing a bell.
All right, well, I'm going to turn over all the cards now. She was played by Valerie Bertinelli on One Day at a Time.
Oh,
she was Barbara Cooper.
Oh. I don't think I remember their names. I just knew, like, who they were. Mrs. Future Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah. Well, back then, she was hot. For at least in, you know, in my age group. You know, now looking back on it, I probably feel evil being an old man looking at her. But at that point, it was.
But you weren't then.
Cool. Yeah, I was younger than. Well, I still am younger than her.
Yeah. So yeah, she was I don't remember. Again, because it's been so long since I read this, I don't know if we're going to find out this is Valerie Cooper. I don't remember. I mean, Mystique.
Was the fact that Mystique was Valerie Cooper a known fact? Or was that something yet to be revealed?
In what? You mean... Well... what was... damn it. Because she headed up... She headed up the team. It was in one of the X books. There were Valerie Cooper... Kind of like the Thunderbolts, but it was like the Crimson Commando, Avalanche, and like it used to be the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but now they were formed. It wasn't X Factor, X Force, and I can't remember what they were called. Freedom Squad, Freedom Force. Was it Freedom Force?
I believe
maybe it was Freedom Force. I'm getting that confused with the game Freedom Force with that. Yeah, so they were. She Mystique was the handler, but she did it posed as Valerie Cooper. But I don't remember what book that was in, because I know they didn't have their own book. But it's been odd. This will be something I'll have to research, because it's
perhaps there'll be more on that next time.
Perhaps, yeah. Maybe I'll do some homework and look that up. So, yeah, the character Valerie Cooper has got a long and, from what I remember, convoluted history.
Well, I assume, again, I have not read ahead on this. I'm just reading it as we go along. But I assume that at some point we're going to have more doings with her. So
yes.
That'll give you the opportunity to present a little bit more of an elaborate history.
Yes, I will definitely look into that. Well, I guess we need to do some grading.
Yep. You want to go first or second?
Sure, I'll go first. Cover.
Want to kill him now or take him?
Kill off? Me now. Kill me now. Bam. I will give the cover. I'll give it a B. It's all right. It's not trash. It's a little bit better than average. A B. B for the cover. What do you think?
I agree. It is not trash. That it's okay. It's just not something that would make it stand out beyond the rest of the books on the shelf, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm going to say a B minus.
Okay. Interior art. You know, I didn't really find any flubs, or I had no big issues with it. I will give it. I'll give the art an A.
I'm gonna say I like the art overall. I don't think there's any drawings, even though there's a couple that like are a little bit exaggerated emotionally, if I can say that. I think I'm going to just say a B plus. I think it's very good, but it's just not quite at the A level. I think there's a couple of points, like I said, where the storytelling feels just a little bit disjointed. And for that reason, I'm going to take away just a slight bit. I'm still giving it above average. And I think the Bob Layton inking makes it excellent.
But well, see, I
B-plus is still excellent.
The Bob Layton inking plus with possible Jim Starlin homages is what pushes it to an A for me. So, okay. But to each his own. Story. Even though, you know, I was whining about, so much going on. I'm going against this very thing I often bitch about. I will give the story an A.
Because
we kind of wrap things up. And I feel like we've wrapped things up on one, like we wrapped up the immediate danger that was being posed by Kang setting loose all these different factions. And now we will move on to a different aspect of this story.
Yeah, you get some closure while keeping the story going. I agree with you totally. My only complaint was I would have liked to seen some of the battles build up a little bit more, because you only have so many pages to do this, and we have three different battles going on, plus some side issues. But that again. I think as this whole saga goes on, I may regret having thought that, because this is going to be so long. But I think I would give it a solid A, except for that thought. So as a standalone issue, I'm going to bring it down to an A-, just because I feel like I would have wanted to see a little bit more development in how these battles went forward.
Okay. So overall, I'll give the book an A.
And overall, I think I'm an A-.
Okay. Sounds good.
But, yeah, solid book and still makes me very interested in seeing where it's going to go. That last shot with the Sentinels really, like, I wanted to see where it was going to go already. And then the Sentinels just kind of ramped it up. You know, the Sentinels, while primarily an X-Men thing, does bring me back to, I believe it's issues 103 and 104, or 104 and 105.
Oh, yeah.
Of the original Avengers series, and I really liked that Sentinels storyline.
Oh, yeah, that was with the guy, when he's like, oh, I see only darkness. Yes, because you're dead.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the next one. And I'm going to keep looking forward to the next one, because there's so many.
And the one
I wish to go
that.
On.
And the one after
looking
that.
Looking forward.
It's a man reading an Avengers comic. Who's reading an Avengers comic?
See, you're going to Planet of the Apes and I'm going to Khan. I'm looking forward to the next one. And I wish to go on looking forward to the next one.
So yep. The next
that'll
one
do
be,
it. What do we got next? Issue 45.
It'll be issue 45/460. And I'm already peeking at it now. And we will still have more Manuel Garcia, Bob Layton goodness?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yes, we will.
So that's something to look forward to in the not-too-distant future. But in the meanwhile, that'll do it for this week. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Dr. Bill will return with the next issue.
Well, hopefully this won't be like, you know, Buckaroo Banzai will return. Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League, which never came out.
Well, I'm thinking James Bond will return, but...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm James Bond now. Holy shit! I just scrolled through to the end of the next issue.
I have not done that yet. I don't know what happened.
Forgot. Didn't see that coming, or forgot about that. Whoa. Jeez. Okay.
So, all right. I have no idea.
High
what
praise for next issue.
All right. We're going to see what happens.
Okay.
We'll get to it soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.